This is a Defocus Media production.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the 2020 podcast, bringing clarity to optometry, business, entrepreneurship, and life. So happy to have you all back here again for another episode. Thank you so much for all the support. And as always, I always have a request right off the top. If you get any value from this episode or any previous episodes, please do share it and, you know, hit subscribe, hit like, leave a review, leave a comment. All of that stuff helps so much. And it means so much to me when you guys do that. So thank you so much in the past for all the support and all the support that will be upcoming, I'm sure as well. As always, I'm looking to bring amazing guests on the podcast who can bring value to us from a business perspective, from, you know, personal growth perspective. And I have somebody today, Dr. Jim Azichuk, who is going to be able to hit all of those notes for us today, guaranteed. Dr. Jim Azichuk graduated from the University of Waterloo in 1999 and opened the optical studio in Lethbridge, Alberta. The practice has now grown to 7 optometrists, and they recently moved into a new space, which is 10,000 square feet. How incredible is that? He has been fortunate to sit on the council for the Alberta Association of Optometrists and serve as the president of the association for 2 years. He is also the acting chair of the Council for Healthy Eyes Canada. And that's something that we're definitely going to talk about today, because I think that's such an important initiative that I think maybe not enough people have heard of yet. But thank you, Jim, for joining me. Really, really great to have you on the podcast. I'm so glad that you agreed to do this.
Thank you, Harbir. It's a real pleasure. And thank you for such a warm welcome. That was a great introduction.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And I there's a lot of information I didn't share in the intro yet. I'd love for you, if you don't mind me giving your own introduction from your perspective, who you are, where you live, you know, where you work, all of that.
Sure. Yeah. It's amazing how fast time goes by. I mean, you said 1999 is when I graduated, and how fast we've kind of grown. The years go by pretty quick. But we started off maybe, you know, coming home was great. We started off in a 1,300 square foot building and then grew to a little larger space. And now we're in our hopefully final location. It'll last us a while. It's been quite an experience and a journey to get here. It really is amazing. Isn't something you really envision when you get out of school, how fast that'll go.
No kidding. Yeah, definitely the time flies. 99 doesn't seem like that long ago, really. Like, so many vivid memories from, well, 1999, I think the most key thing was like the whole year 2K thing, right? And that doesn't feel like that long ago, but now that's over 20 years. You know, I graduated in 2010, and that feels like literally yesterday. But, you know, I shared something on social media recently about our new associate that started working at our practice, who she actually observed and shadowed at our office 5 or 6 years ago. And so it's crazy that 5 or 6 years went by that fast that she's now graduated. And she, you know, it's beautiful that it's come full circle and she's working at our office. But it's that period of time that, like, I was kind of hit in the face with that. Like, whoa, it's been that long already? Crazy how it flies.
When I was in the role of past president, we had to bring on new council members and get a little more interest in there. And a lot of the new candidates I was speaking to said, yeah, it'll be good to get some younger people on there with some new views. Wait a minute, not a younger guy anymore with new views? When did this happen?
You look young, but I guess you're just not that young anymore. Jim, why don't we start with that, as far as being on the association, past president, you know, I think that's where I first met you, as you were visiting BC, because every year when we have our conference, we have presidents from other provinces come and speak. And I, you know, it's just so good to meet you, you know, looking up on the stage, seeing somebody who's the president of an association for a province is like, there's immediate sort of respect that comes with that from my perspective, viewing you out there, but you're just like such a down-to-earth guy. It was so awesome to get to know you, but I'd love to, if you could share, what was it like? How did you get to that position? Like, what came before you? You were part of the association and other positions, but then what kind of roles did you have as the president?
Right. With the Alberta Association, I know it's a little different than a lot of the provinces. Some of the provinces, you can kind of move through the chairs fairly quickly. Mm. And Alberta, there's always been this push for historical perspectives. So once you get on council, there's a number of different roles you have before you start moving through the chairs. So once you make that commitment, you move through Secretary Treasurer Chair for 2 years, then the president role for 2 years, and then past president for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I was actually on council for 12 years in total. So yeah, by the time you start moving through the chairs, it's another 6-year commitment. So it's a long ways through there. When I first joined council, it would have been 2009, I suppose. hey, you kind of get on there and you think, oh, I'm going to make a lot of change. You're going to really move things forward. But you don't realize how much inner workings there are, what goes on behind the scenes to make an association successful and to move stuff forward for the profession. So it's a lot of learning experience before you get into that president's role. Right. And yeah, it's amazing how much stuff you pick up along the way. And, you know, it's really fortunate. A lot of people hear that kind of commitment and it's a tough decision to make to sit in that role. But the amount of professional growth that comes from it, personal growth that comes from sitting in that capacity, I really was fortunate to be given that opportunity. So yeah, by the time you get to their provinces and you meet people, you just, the amount of information that you learn about from on the way and the type of people you meet, like you say, meeting you when I was in that role and some of the other people I met along the way. I mean, BCDO has some phenomenal people in their leadership, going to Saskatchewan, hearing some of the challenges they have and the people in their leadership and Manitoba, you really do. You learn a lot, but you make lifetime friendships as you go, and that kind of drives the passion for the profession and wanting to see it do well.
Yeah,
definitely something as a new OD getting out of school, I'd really encourage them to get involved in any type of capacity, whether it's committees, whether it's on the association board, even just with wisdom groups, the amount of knowledge to gain from others. And I mean, our profession is still small enough that a person can really make effective change in their province. I mean, something you can really do to advance yourself is getting involved, and you really can make a difference. So it was just a great opportunity to have.
This episode is brought to you by InMode. The InMode radio frequency and IPL devices have been game changers in our dry eye practice. Specifically, the Forma Eye, which is the radio frequency handle that can be used directly over the eyelids without the need of a corneal shield, has been amazing for our MGD patients. If you're looking to elevate your dry eye game and take your dry eye practice to the next level, I highly encourage you look into the InMode treatment device. Reach out to your InMode rep to learn more. And now to our episode. Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. And that's something that I've been sort of echoing over the years. You know, I've been involved kind of on and off with our associates, like in a formal capacity on and off, like I was involved in some committees, actually still am, but informally, like I'm just always trying to get, you know, wherever I can help, you know, I'm always messaging people, you know, whether it's whatever different committees. I feel like the one thing is it's a form of giving back, right? It's a way of feeling more fulfilled. But I think, like you said, it's a way like of really helping yourself build professionally and personally. I tell a lot of people that most of the big opportunities that have come to me through my career have come because of some connections I've made through being involved in the association, like the network. I imagine you'd feel the same way. Like the amount of networking you do is so valuable in building your career, your personal professional development. And you did it on this national level. I'm just talking about here locally, right? So what would you say is like some of the couple of like really key takeaways that you could share with us from that experience?
I think, like you say, even national, the amount of issues going on, optometry, I mean, across the country, everybody faces a little different issues. There's different priorities in other parts of the country. So there's a little bit of learning you can get from everywhere in there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the relationship you build is just invaluable. Some provinces are, you know, a little ahead in their scope. So just to see where things are coming and coming trends, and yeah, like you say, to take those ideas and put it back and implement it into your own business is an unbelievable opportunity.
Yeah.
One of the things when I was president, it was back in 2016 to 2018, a big push for our province was going through an operational board where each of the board members was kind of involved in the doing of everything. So say the, you know, chair of conferences and special events would actually have to book the speakers, make the phone calls and set up a lot of the stuff like that. Mm-hmm. During that time period, we actually moved to a governance board. So now looking at strategic planning 5 to 10 years out, APIs to do that, and then putting in a business plan and entrusting a CEO to do that, and then evaluating the KPIs and how we can make, you know, strategic decisions based on our limited resources, and then to take that back into your own business and the amount of growth that would fuel and how you run things, and even dealing with staffing issues and how to manage people is just a great opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. Wow. Once you move to that governance model, now you have this like real corporate type of structure that you can actually just learn from and implement that into your own business. That's really, really cool. So we talked about the value of ODs being involved, right? Like I said, in a way, I think it's a way of giving back, but also just to help. If we want to succeed, our profession has to succeed also around us. And so being involved can actually, you can make a difference. But there's some other initiatives out there, right? That's on our provincial level or our state level, we can get involved. But there are other initiatives out there that are broader and on a national scale. And you've been involved in this one since its inception. And like, I really, really want us to talk about this because it's so amazing. And you know, full disclosure, I've been very fortunate to now be part of this initiative, recently joined the board of the Council for Healthy Eyes Canada, which has this initiative called Think About Your Eyes. And I think a lot of people have heard of this, at least sort of peripherally or somewhere they've heard of Think About Your Eyes, this campaign. But please, let's start from the beginning. Like, what is Think About Your Eyes? And, you know, what is CHECK? And, you know, how did it start?
Sure. So we're lucky on our board, we kind of, well, way back I was on the NPEC committee, the National Public Education Committee. And back then we kind of looked at just how to get a unified voice across Canada for optometry, increase awareness, the importance of eye exams, you know, comprehensive care and how it fits into the whole systemic health of the eyes or health of the body. And at that time, optometry was really funding the whole campaign. Down in the States, there was kind of this rise about the Think About Your Eyes campaign, and it was industry and optometry in partnership to kind of really grow eye exams and year-over-year increases. We looked at that in Alberta and said, you know, why aren't we doing that up there and getting support from industry to help fund this education campaign? So back in 2017, we met with some leaders of TAE-US and seen if we can modify that, adapt it, and bring it up to Canada. And we were very fortunate that they were very collaborative. They were offering collateral and just helping us get our feet on the ground and get running with it. And then we also had support of a number of industry partners. It was Essilor, Nikon, Shamir, Alcon, and J&J really got on board and helped support the program. So we started off as a very small pilot project in Alberta, and it was just an unbelievable success. So we formed the Council for Healthy Eyes Canada, which is the board that its sole purpose is to run the Think About Your Eyes Committee, which develops and implements a whole marketing communications campaign. One of the big things about the TAE campaign is the data collection. Kind of in the past, you always looked at impressions and, you know, how many people it's hitting out there for this campaign. But the thing with TAE is we really want to be smart about the dollars we're spending, look at the data we're getting from it, and then really analyze it to how to positively influence consumer behavior to make sure we're running an effective campaign. So it's very cool collecting the data from it. And some of the stuff we even did was a football study where we used digital devices. People who are served up an ad, we can actually track them to see if they visit an optometry office. And we had like a 12% increase in those who are served an ad actually walking into an optometry office. So very effective campaign. Wow. So for the 2018 year, we ran it Alberta. For 2019, we actually had BCDO sign up, as well as Saskatchewan, Manitoba. So it kind of was a Western campaign. From the success we built on there, it moved to national. Unfortunately, in 2020, COVID hit and we had to put the brakes on for 2021. So really was our ambition to take it national. For 2021, we had all the Atlantic provinces and the Western provinces signed up. So
yeah, wow. That's amazing. So you saw what was happening in the US and you thought, why not do it here? And it just started small, I suppose you can say, in Alberta. But there was such a recognizable increase in, basically the goal here is to get people, patients coming through the door across the board. It's not to benefit one region or one type of practice. It's just across the board, increase comprehensive eye exams. And that was a 12% increase. That's pretty amazing.
Correct. An actual footfall traffic study. So we're still waiting for 2021, but yeah, it's really exciting. The neat thing was we actually created all the bilingual collateral as well, so that, you know, that kind of the whole Canadian messaging really has taken on its own. So yeah, it's been a great
amazing. Yeah, and I, of course, now in my short time that I've been involved, I've seen some of that, and it's cool that, you know, of course, each part of the country has a different voice. Literally, in Canada, there's literally different languages being spoken, of course, but, you know, different kind of key messaging that kind of will resonate with people in that area. So I've seen that messaging has been sort of tailored to different parts of the country. So that's really nice. And like, how cool is it now we live in this time? It's a little creepy, but now we're using this to our benefit that we can track people that closely, right? Like, you know, other companies or businesses and industries are doing this where they're you click on something and now that company is going to follow you and know exactly what you're doing from that point forward. But we're able to use it to the advantage of this industry and to our patients' advantage as well, right? Ultimately is what we want.
really as effective use of the dollars for the campaign to, yeah, to make it as useful as possible is, yeah, pretty significant.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Kind of exciting thing too, that we're really striving towards is a little better optometrist engagement for the 2022 year. So we're really looking forward to, we have a generated a whole toolkit that is available on the Council for Healthy Eyes website. So an individual optometrist can go on there and use all the marketing collateral and make use of it on their own website, their own social.
Yeah.
So yeah, getting that better engagement is really what's going to drive 2022 as well.
Yeah, I think that's really key. Actually, that's something I wanted to touch on, right? So this is like all this hard work that's gone, and now you got multiple provinces involved. You have these key industry leading organizations and companies involved, Alcon, Essilor, and so on, putting money and effort towards this campaign to ultimately get more patients in the door. So this is to benefit any working OD in Canada, ultimately. And there's a lot of people behind the scenes putting in their time and effort. And then number one, I really want to raise the awareness for this initiative that's been around for a few years and is doing so well, but so few people actually are like really actively aware and taking advantage of it. And then number two, you know, how can people get involved to make it a bigger thing? Like, how can we spread the word? So first off, the awareness, like you said, there are resources for us to use. That was one of the first things that I remember you talking about when you were in BC, was that there's this all these resources that we can use, content and collateral that we can use on our websites. Where can we find that?
So Council for Healthy Eyes Canada is the one website that all this information is at. And then there's under the member section, you click on there and there is a toolkit there. I think another thing is just making your association aware of you wanting to use this information and even giving feedback on what you want. And you check really the reason for existence is to increase awareness. Optometrists know what'll increase their awareness. Like I said, there's such regional differences in each area. We do have group, we have the information, we have the collateral available, and we have the resources available at check to help individual ODs out. So if any feedback you want to give us, we'll help create the collateral to do that. So when COVID first hit, there was a lot of people asking for different things to help them out for their office that way. So we created a lot of COVID material when it first happened. So there is a lot of resources that we can provide. So those regional differences, we're more than willing to help out for that.
Yeah, great.
Even Manitoba's one where their members were asking for things, the association relayed it back to us, and we were more than happy to create collateral for that stuff.
That's great. So Council for Healthy Eyes Canada, is that the website? What's the Council for?
Yeah, Council for Healthy Eyes Canada, .ca.
.ca. Okay. So visit that website, go to the member tab, look for the content there. But also, you know, once you've kind of gotten up to speed, speaking to the listener here, you know, once you've gotten up to speed on what check is there for, you know, then speak to your association to let them know that this content was valuable or what maybe you'd like to see. And of course, CHEQ is working in concert with our provincial associations to kind of help us to succeed.
Yeah, it really is about leveraging the member dollars. So the associations are supporting it through their members' dollars, and then the money they're providing is being leveraged with the help of industry. So it really is a great value. Letting your association know that you see value in it, I think, is a huge thing.
So that maybe kind of answers the second thing I was saying, is like, how can people get more involved? I think maybe that would you say that is it? Like, just to kind of like give feedback, talk to your association, or is there more that others can do?
You know, we're always looking for, we have a committee on there. The TAE committee actually is the one that deals with the marketing company, providing feedback, the direction the campaign wants to go. So anybody has an interest in this area with social media, we have some great OD members on there. Some of the provincial associations have their communications marketing people on there. So, I mean, we're getting great feedback from that. CAO has a marketing person who sits on there who's fantastic as well. So yeah, having the association input, individual members input is huge. So anybody who wants involvement, we're definitely more than open to that.
Got it. Okay, great. And should I just get them to email you, Jim?
Email me.
Email me. I'll pass you on.
That sounds great. I'd be more than happy to discuss with anybody who wants involvement.
What's up, guys? I just want to take a minute to highlight Optical Prism Magazine, Canada's oldest optical industry magazine and the only Canadian ECP publication that delivers 12 issues per year. And just to let you know, it is definitely on my must-read list every single month. Its publisher, Suzanne LaCourte, and her team have modernized the Optical Prism publication since she purchased it in September of 2020 to become Canada's all things eyewear and eye care magazine. And from my discussions with Suzanne, as you can hear in our podcast a few months back, they have a lot more in store this year in 2022. If you want to keep up with all things eye care and eyewear, go to the website opticalprism.ca and subscribe to the newsletter, and even have a hard copy of their free magazine delivered right to your door. And again, definitely on my reading list every single month, always so much value that I get from Optical Prism magazine. So make sure you check them out at opticalprism.ca. And now back to our episode. Good. Yeah, I think that's just so important. Again, like, you know, as a profession, we want to continue to grow, and we're like, okay, who, as an individual, I can only do so much. Okay, so then you get involved with your association, good. But to know that there's something on a national scale to help across the board, I think is just so, so valuable. So I'd love for people to learn a little bit more about CHECK. If you have questions, you know, if anybody follows me on social media or whatever, feel free to just shoot me a message. If you're looking to get more information on how this works and how this initiative works, I'm happy to chat with you about it, you know, because I think this is something that we should all be more aware of for sure. So let's narrow the scope a little bit. So we've been talking, we went from provincial to national. We're going to come all the way back down to the optical studio, this fantastic clinic that you've built. You know, you're the co-owner of, and you just moved into your new space. 10,000 square feet is mind-boggling to me, Jim. Like, I'm trying to just think about what you do with 10,000 square feet. But I'd love for you to tell me. Kind of, you know, I know you said it's been a long road. There's probably a lot of things that happened that, you know, you can't exactly remember. You know, how did you get here? You know, what do you think that you did to take whatever it was in 1999 to where it is now?
Right. Yeah, we were kind of chatting about this beforehand. It's like I guess the most recent book we've been kind of reading is Good to Great. And, you know, they talk about that flywheel. You know, you start off pushing the flywheel and how difficult it is. But once you get it moving, it's there wasn't just one push. It was a number of different pushes. So, yeah, along the way, it was a lot of little things that built up to it. From our last location of this one, I would say a lot of that, our clinic patient facing is probably about 6,500 square feet. And then the staff area is about 3,500 square feet. And, you know, at first you look at that and like, do we really need a boardroom this big? Do we need this many admin offices? But it's been a huge thing. That was one of the things I really, you know, maybe starting out, I didn't see the value in. Mm. You know, always having the right people on the bus and the proper staffing there. What we've really found is empowering our staff and to do the things that they do best. So we have a boardroom for staff meetings. It's no longer, you know, huddled in a lunchroom that's a multi-purpose room and a bit of a mess. We can have proper functioning meetings where we have boards that track our KPIs, how to strategize on improving things. We can have Zoom meetings with reps, especially with the way things have been lately. And, you know, maybe that in-person visits have been a little more limited the last couple of years. We found that really facilitated just kind of moving ahead and just really following through on our strategic direction. Admin offices to make sure, you know, our accounts receivable are up to date, make sure we're ordering the right inventory, to have meetings on our, you know, the right frame selection is on the board. So we really found that's made a big difference to making sure all the, you know, the things that happen behind the scenes actually happen behind the scenes. Yeah, so that's been a huge change for us. And it just kind of part of that growing up experience, I think, and making sure, yeah, people aren't caught in the whirlwind and they can actually concentrate on growing the business rather than just being caught down. Yeah. And, you know, growing the business in between, you know, running around, getting all the things done down in the dispensary or the exam room. So,
yeah, I think that's what's the phrase? It's like working on your business versus working in your business, right? And I think that's a really tough distinction to make. Like, here's, well, if I'm not seeing patients, then, well, my business is not growing. But if you're only seeing patients, then your business is also not going to grow the way that it needs to. And I know personally, I've had a challenge seeing things differently that way. I've always been that kind of like, just go in there and do the work kind of person. Fortunately, I have a business partner who does see things that way and is able to kind of like, you know, help me understand that side of the business a little better. But also going back to, you know, you're talking about that kind of like the governance model that you were talking about with the association and you bringing that in, it clearly is beneficial to you. So what would you say out of that? Let's say you have I'll use myself as an example, right? So we have a practice that's about 1,500 square feet. It's fairly new, you know, two exam rooms. It's starting to slowly get busier. But, you know, we have a lunchroom where we hold our meetings, right? We don't have a boardroom. Like from there, you know, how does someone look at it, the working on the business? Like what types of steps should somebody you know, off the cuff, I know we didn't really have you kind of set up to answer this question, but whatever you could think of that might be helpful.
Yeah, I think, like you say, it's just dedicating that time to do it. It's always putting that time aside to get it done. I mean, you always think, well, I see two more patients in a day or three more patients in a day. But I mean, the biggest thing we did was coming up with what is our why, like actually sitting down and discussing it. And as an association, that was one of the things I learned, is that mission statement. And, you know, it's kind of your guiding North Star to look at. Mm-hmm. So with us, it was creating that memorable patient experience. So how do we do that throughout the whole journey throughout the office? So I mean, just taking the time aside, we have weekly staff meetings. And at those staff meetings, it's not just, it used to be where kind of me and my business partner would dictate, okay, this is what we want to do. This is how we're going to get there. You know, we're not always at the front desk realizing, you know, their pinch points there and how they can create a better experience. So I guess it was transferring that power over to them to make it happen. And some of the stuff they bring to us are pretty unique and different. So one of the key areas we have upstairs is having a call center. So taking those phone calls coming in off the front desk. So now when people come in, somebody can actually greet them rather than being on the phone. So, I mean, that was one of the huge things that, you know, makes a more memorable experience for patients coming in. We have a concierge at the front door to greet you. So sometimes people don't need to, you know, talk to the front staff to greet them and say, well, I just need my glasses adjusted. The concierge can take them right over. Someone who might take a little more time, or they're getting their glasses edged while they wait, they can bring them coffee or juice, or, you know, little kids get snacks, those types of things. So that's where there's a lot of input and in what they see going on. So I think just empowering staff and getting the right people in the right positions, strong org chart to make sure everybody knows what their role is, really made a big difference for us.
That's amazing to know. And actually, so much of what you just shared is going to be instantly applicable for me in our practice. And I'm sure others who are listening, but, you know, having the org chart, having the specific dedicated roles for different people. And, you know, that Jim Collins says it in that book, you know, I've read that book too. Great book. You know, having the right people in the right seat position in the bus is so important. So there are a lot of good lessons there. Thank you for sharing that. One of the other things I wanted to ask you about your practice is like specialty care. So do you offer certain different specialties, and which ones do you offer at this time?
Yeah, we just, one of the, you said we had seven optometrists. One of the ones we brought on is really taking interest in specialty contact lenses. So it's kind of a niche area that we do that's hopefully going to be growing quite a bit in the next few years. Mm-hmm. Another one I've taken a big interest in is dry eye. Obviously, that's a big growing area right now. Mm. I've been really fortunate to be part of a wisdom group with some real go-getters out there, a lot of mentors on that group that have helped steered me in that direction. So some of the exciting things, having a little more room like that has given us the opportunity to have dedicated rooms for certain things. So our dry eye room is a little more spa-like. You throw that specialty wallpaper up, a little nicer cabinetry. We had the massage chair. We got the flat table in there. So yeah, we have an RF, Cynosure RF in there. And then we also have the Lipoflow, is something we had a few years ago. And we brought in a skincare line. So just trying to differentiate a little bit more. Our IPL just showed up a couple days ago. So very we'll be nice. Right away. Another big thing we've done is TVs in every room. So we have like a 42-inch TV in every exam room we'll be implementing right away, to which we'll have kind of ads running on what we actually offer. Because a lot of time patients are looking for services, but they don't actually know what you offer. So you got a captive audience in the exam room. Well, you know, maybe that 5-10 minutes where they're waiting for you to peek your head in. So yeah, we'll be serving them up kind of based on their demographic and why they're there. We can be putting up ads up there for them and just letting them know what we do offer. So
Very good. So those are two. So specialty contact lens, dry eye. What else? Do you do any myopia control? Like, or is that sort of just sort of integrated generally?
I would say it's a little bit of dabbling. We do MyoSmart and we do some of the specialty lenses, a little bit of ortho K with our new fellow just joined on with us. We've been lucky. One of the other optometrists that just joined us did a little more vision therapy where she came from her last practice. So we're kind of excited maybe to get that up and going. She's just kind of with us a few months now. So hopefully once she gets kind of settled into place, we'll be doing a little bit more of that. Good. Likely is specialty areas to people who really know what they're doing. Dabbling maybe isn't always the best. So I was glad somebody else came on with a little better grasp on that stuff.
I agree with you on that one. Definitely, I do not put my hands anywhere near any specialty contact lenses or binocular vision type stuff. And that's not because I don't think it's important. It's because I don't know it well enough that I don't want to mess around with it, right? Dry eye and myopia control, you know, I'm happy to give those a try. But would you say that those have been important areas of building your practice as well?
Oh, it's unbelievable. You know, the dry eye stuff, you think, wow, if you really want to make this investment in the technology, and when you start off, you're a little apprehensive, boy, do I recommend this and the costs involved with it. But boy, there's no better feeling than, you know, you always have those patients, have you done your hot wash gloves? No, but my eyes hurt. You know, you actually give them something that can give them some relief. What a way to build the practice and loyalty to the practice and word of mouth. That has been phenomenal. We've probably been running the R for maybe 4 or 5 months now. And the growth we've experienced there and the confidence you feel. And it's just something when you have a passion for it, it's exciting to go into work and you got something new and different that you just know you feel confident recommending. It's, yeah, that's been a huge, yeah, growth area for us.
That's definitely awesome. So this is a question that I ask, you know, a lot of ODs who have these types of specialty types of pieces of equipment. So, you know, you have the RF, that's a fairly expensive unit, your IPL. It's a big investment for you, but it's an investment for the patient when, you know, you're charging $1,000 or $1,500 or $2,000 for a set of treatments. Do you get a lot of pushback? If so, you know, how would you share, if you don't mind sharing, like, how do you overcome that? Or how do you present it to the patient to make it feel like that investment is going to be worth their time?
Right. I think it's having a passion for it, knowing what you're recommending and being confident in it. I think having the information that goes behind it. I mean, it's one thing to say, oh, we're going to try this or we'll try this. If you feel confident, you have the knowledge. I found it's been an easy transition. Mm. Like I said, I've been lucky to be part of a wisdom group who are probably early adopters to a lot of this technology. So I've been hearing about it for quite a while. And then I had the opportunity to attend the Dry Eye Summit out in Toronto fairly recently. Good. And the information, the science, the technology, the studies that have come with it, I really do feel confident. And I think when you're making that recommendation, you're not selling the patient something, but you're making a recommendation that you can feel confident in. I think that just comes with confidence. I think it does.
And that confidence comes, in your case, comes from the knowledge, like the science and the feedback expertise from your colleagues, even before like you've had the machine in your office, or only if you've only had it there for a little while. You feel like that information you've obtained from other sources brings you enough confidence to share it with your patients.
Yeah. And we've had enough, I think it's been in the office a while too, to see the results of it has made a difference. I think it's not just the doctor recommendation. It has to be that whole journey throughout the office as well. Like, I think everything has to be cohesive. So your website has to kind of display the information that you know why it's going to work. I think your staff has to have bought into it and why it works and be knowledgeable. And then the information you send out to the patient, that follow-up care. What we really found too is the baseline measurements as well. There's a couple of computer programs out there which record all the dry eye treatments. We use one, CSI Dry Eye. So even just the baseline measurements, I mean, a lot of people are obviously familiar with the OSDI and speed and DEQ, but a lot of the other things we look at, we have the lipid scan, sort of look at the structure of the glands and MMP, and we have the IPEN to measure osmolarity, the non-invasive tear breakup times, so getting all those baseline measurements and then be able to show the patients after the care. And I mean, sometimes it takes a little while for the symptoms resolves, even though you're noticing the signs are improving. So to show the data that, I think that helps out quite a bit as well.
Gotcha. Yeah, I would say that's been a consistent theme amongst any colleagues that I speak to who have this equipment, who are having success with, more importantly, having success with the equipment. It's having those baseline measurements, mybography, and the non-invasive tear breakups. And these things are key because, like you said, a lot of times the symptomatic relief is delayed. It's not right away. In fact, there's even times where it feels worse because they're getting the corneal sensitivities coming back, right? All of this. But if you can show them, well, look, this looks better than it used to, at least.
Yeah.
You know, that patients feel good about that, at least. You know, when I tell them, look, this is, I know you don't feel necessarily better, but it is looking better. That's enough for patients to feel good about what they're doing and then stick with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Dabbling is difficult. It's an investment in technology, but once you have it and you have the confidence to show the results, it's that was a huge step forward for us, I believe.
Great. So before we kind of move on to kind of wrapping up with a couple of last questions, I'd love for you to share, Jim, if there's any topics in general that you'd like to talk about. And more importantly, you know, if people wanted to get in touch with you or learn more about your office, where could they do that?
Yeah, feel free to email me anytime. It's just jimasuchak@gmail.com. So jimasuchak@gmail.com. I'm more than happy to have a conversation with anyone about anything. Yeah, the biggest thing, I suppose I'm probably a big advocate for joining their professional association, their college. Yeah, we've always been very fortunate in Alberta. Everybody who volunteers for stuff, I mean, they're all volunteers who want to make a difference, want to make things better. A lot of people are like, well, I don't have the experience. I don't have the knowledge. Mm-hmm. It's everybody has experience, knowledge. It's your profession. You develop a big passion for it too, and seeing what you can do to grow the profession forward. The amount of changes I seen while I was on council was significant, and you can have a big influence on that. It's definitely will expand your passion for it for sure. I definitely say get in any capacity. It's huge.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it can ever be overstated how valuable it is for the individual and for the profession as a whole when people get involved. Definitely. Awesome. So Jim, there's two questions I asked if you've listened to a previous podcast, and you might know this already, but there's two questions I asked to every guest at the end of the podcast. So we're going to go through those now. The first one is if we could hop in a time machine and head back in time to a point in time that was difficult, perhaps you were struggling in some capacity, feel free if you'd like to share that moment that comes to mind. But more importantly, what advice would you give to yourself, younger Jim, at that time to kind of help him get through that point?
Yeah. You know, I guess probably that everybody experiences difficulties with growth, financial. It seems like I'm always delayed. There's always, you're growing for what you want to be. So you increase staff, you increase your debt, you're buying equipment. So you're always behind. So financially, there always seems to be a lag until things catch up. But myself, I always get distracted and start on a new project. So you never seem to get caught up. But I guess what I'd tell young Jim, I probably wouldn't do anything different. I am very happy with where I got to. If anything, I wish I got involved in the networking aspect of it sooner. I think the associations, the wisdom groups, sitting on boards, I waited probably 10 years after I graduated to join in on that stuff. And that's huge. I think the camaraderie that comes from charity organizations that you join, from board work you do, and the amount of knowledge and stuff that comes with it, it's building those friendships and the network is just huge. I would have said, I wish I would have did that stuff earlier. It really enjoy what you do.
That's awesome. I mean, I think that's still super valuable, even though you say you're happy with where you ended up and I wouldn't change anything. That's still, you know, something to give people some advice on what they could maybe do better. It's funny. I agree with so much. The lag is so true. I've shared that with so many people. It's like you do something and we kind of live in this place of this instant gratification generally in our society, right? But it's like working out, for example. You know, if you exercise for a couple of weeks, you're not going to see a difference, but it is making a difference, but it's going to be months until you really see it. And the same kind of thing happens with business. And it goes the other way too. Let's say you worked out for a long time and you get really fit, and then you stop working out, you'll still look good for a long time because of those effects, but you know you're heading in the wrong direction. So it can be a little deceiving, you know, if you get a little lazy or complacent, right? Yeah. But there's that lag period that I think that discourages people sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, stick to it.
Stick with it. So the last question I have for you then, Jim, is everything that you've accomplished, you know, president of the association, this big part of CHECK and your success in your practice and everything else, how much of all of this would you say is due to luck and how much is due to hard work?
You know, yeah, I would say people create their own luck. You really have to get out there. You got to meet people. You got to talk to people. You got to always be looking for opportunities. So I've been very fortunate who I've been associated with. I've been lucky with my business partner. I've been lucky with people I went to school with. I've been lucky with the friendships I've had. And I think that has really helped to drive me to where I am. So it's yeah, you can't get too far without that networking opportunities for sure. So you got to go out there and create your luck for sure. Yeah,
that's great. I love it. Well, thanks again, Jim, for coming on. Thank you for sharing all that information about CHECK. You know, everybody who's listening, please look into it. All our Canadian colleagues, look into the Council for Healthy Eyes Canada. Think about your eyes. Get those resources. Reach out to your association to give them some feedback. See how we can make it better. And, you know, if you have any questions for Jim, all his wealth of knowledge, you know, feel free to reach out to him as well. Thanks again, Jim. Much appreciated.
I appreciate it.
And thank you, everybody who's listening and watching. Again, once again, if you got any value from this, I'm sure you got multiple pieces of value from this. Please do share it. Take a screenshot, throw it up on Instagram. Hit like, hit subscribe, do all those things. And I will be back with another episode very, very soon. Take care, guys.